Radhiki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj, Shima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Itai Gopriman. Okay, kids, quieten down. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 15 of Canto 9. At the end of chapter 16, which will be in a few weeks, we'll have our second exam for the year, the closed book exam, which means your open book exams will be due on the, what's the Monday? 27. That's the end of July is 27th.
Yeah.
Okay. So 27th. So we'll say the week after that. What would that be then? 1st of... 3rd of August. Okay. So your open book exams will be due. The essay will be due on the 3rd of August. If it's later than that, then you'll lose marks. And your oral presentation will be due on the 3rd of August also. So you may have to organise that. And the closed book exam will be around that time. I'll let you know in the next few weeks. At the end of chapter 16, we'll do the closed book exam. So any points from our previous class?
We saw the dharma, Vika dharma of different leaders, and Kalyan Bhogan Devadharma, he said for Kalyuga it was chanting of holy name, which is easiest way which is that's being prescribed in the context of basically describing the dharma.
Okay. Any other points? Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 15. What is chapter 15 entitled? Okay, so we'll hear about the next incarnation of the Lord. His name is Parashurama. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikshit, from the womb of Urvashi, six sons were generated by Pururava. The names were Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Raya, Vijaya, and Joya. The son of Shrutayu was Vasuman. The son of Satyayu, Shrutanjaya. The son of Raya, Ekka. The son of Jaya, Amit. And the son of Vijaya, Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana. The son of Kanchana was Hotraka. The son of Hotraka was Janu, who drank all the water of the Ganges in one sip. So here we're hearing about the genealogical table. We're hearing about all the descendants. These are great personalities. They've been immortalized in the words of the Bhagavatam. So just by hearing their names, we're becoming purified. There is histories involving many of these persons, but we don't have time to go into the history of every person. But if you do some research, many of these people are quite prominent and very powerful personalities. And they're mentioned in other Puranas and other histories. The son of Janu was Puru. The son of Puru was Balaka. The son of Balaka was Ajaka. The son of Ajaka was Kusha. Kusha had four sons named Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu, and Kushanaba. The son of Kushambu was Gati. King Gati had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmana sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gati, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmana, "My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kush. Because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas, you have to give some dowry for my daughter. Thereafter, bring at least 100,000 horses, such each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left."
The son of King Gati, who was said to be a Brahmana and Kshatriya combined, Vishwamitra attained the status of a Brahma Rishi, as explained later. In the marriage of Satyavati with Rishika, Muni, would come a son with the spirit of a Kshatriya. King Gati demanded that an uncommon request be fulfilled before the Brahmana Rishika could marry his daughter.
Okay. What are the points here?
Somebody wanted to avoid Rishi to marry his daughter. Ask for the dowry, which is not usual.
Good. Any other points?
Should not underestimate a Brahmana. Brahmana is the highest class for thinking, but Kshatriya is still cannot understand very well. Brahmana is interesting, but in the previous interview here, Brahmana asks, but here King Gati is hesitant, so he's making some demands.
Any other points? Hey, sit down.
The kings used to make such unrealistic demands for their daughters to get married because they wanted the suitable or a powerful husband who is like pure or who is some kind of a strong warrior or. So they want to test, they don't want to give their daughter to anyone. So here also we see that how King Gati, maybe his motive was different, but he put in such a demand to Ruchika Rishi. But since Ruchika was such a powerful Rishi, he would work on that problem also.
Anything else? So we see in the Vedic culture there was a great deal of attention and detail to marrying properly. So we should follow that. We can't follow the Vedic situation because the Varnashram system is no longer present in modern society. And we won't establish Varnashram properly in Kali Yuga ever again. Because Kali Yuga requires Kshatriyas to be Kshatriyas. First and foremost, and then Brahmanas to be Brahmanas and everyone else. So these days you don't get the actual Kshatriya, not the real Kshatriya, not like before, and because there's not the real Kshatriya, there will not be the real Varnashram system. Basically Kshatriya Dharma was it was destroyed when Kali Yuga began, and then you see as Kali Yuga evolves, even not long after Kali Yuga began, the Kshatriya Dharma began to disintegrate. But a few hundred years ago when they invented gunpowder, that's when Kshatriya Dharma really lost its merit and its value and its potency. Because you can be the most powerful Kshatriya, but if someone has a gun, then they'll just shoot you and that's it. It's finished. Whereas previously, people would actually fight and there would be skill. Just like if you look at the history of the samurai in Japan, they're very powerful warriors. They're like fearless. But then they shot them all. They just got guns and they just shot. I mean, you cannot defeat a samurai because he's so powerful. But with a gun, you can defeat anyone. Right? At least in this day and age. Previously, a gun would. I mean, someone like Arjuna could even defeat someone who had a gun. But these days, Kshatriya Dharma is being destroyed. So Prabhupada is pointing this out, that in the Vedic culture, it was very important who was married to who. And that kept the integrity and the potency in the families. At least these days, we cannot do what they did previously because we've become impotent and we're not potent anymore. So we can't follow what they followed previously because you won't get the same result anyway. You won't develop the same potency as of children. Because we're not potent, the children will not be as potent. Meaning they won't be actual Kshatriyas or powerful Brahmanas or all these things that diminished in Kali Yuga. So we take the basic principle, which means the marriage should be based upon spiritual principles. If you're going to get married, or if you're going to arrange for someone else to get married, then make sure there is spiritual compatibility. That's the most important thing in Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, you can't get all the other things necessarily. But you have to make sure that the marriage is at least potent as much as possible. Make sure that people are spiritually compatible and serious in Krishna consciousness. That's the main thing we look for when we look for a spouse, someone who's spiritually serious. So, you'll see now, Prabhupada points out that the Kshatriyas have become dismantled and the lower classes are taking over. So you see now, we're leading up to the American presidential election. When will that be? When's the next election? Next September. I mean, it's not this year, but the following year. Yeah, so that's what America is like. They will take, 18 months. It's a whole build-up. It's on the news every night and the whole thing frenzy. So you see already who's practically going to win, right? From the one-party side, what's the two parties called? The Democrats and the... what are the other ones? Yeah, Liberals. But what's the name of the party? Republicans. So you see the Republican, they've already put in their main... You know who will run for the presidency. It'll be Donald Trump. So the guy's not a Kshatriya. He's a Vaishya. And he's, as Prabhupada points out, they're not even Vaishyas of high quality. Because actually in Vedic culture, people were in the mode of goodness, Sattva Gun. But you see these days, the leaders are in Rajagun and Tamagun. So they're not qualified. Even though they're Vaishya, he's a brilliant Vaishya. He knows how to make money. But it's very Rajasic and very Tamasic what they focus on. And just like you see our Australian government at the moment, we have very Rajasic people and Tamasic people in the government. And the policies they're making are detrimental. Just like I was reading before, the current government, the current Prime Minister in Australia, they're trying to reduce the renewable energy target. In other words, instead of investing in renewable energies like solar power and wind power, because there's vested interest in the oil industry and so forth, then they make all their policies to favour that industry, which is what is happening over the world. The whole world could be run at this point in time on renewable energy. We could run everything without oil, but because there's money involved and they're financing the politicians and actually controlling the politicians, then they make decisions accordingly. Just like a few years ago, Ronald Reagan, he was the president of America. So, the president of America is an extremely powerful position. But the head of the World Monetary Fund, the president was giving a speech, and then the head of the World Monetary Fund, he leant over and he said to the president, he said, "You're waffling." In other words, finish your speech. Like that. I mean, this is how powerful these people are. They're more powerful than the presidents of the countries because they finance the people and therefore they control them. So he leaned over. They caught it on the microphone. It wasn't supposed to be heard. But he said, "You're waffling." He said, "Like, finish." He told the president to finish his speech. And the president, another few seconds, finished off and then got off the stage. So this is the nature of Kali Yuga. The actual Varnashram system is not there. But in the Bhagavatam, they're teaching us to try to have the best quality offspring that you can have. Make sure the children are as Krishna conscious as possible. And how do you make them Krishna conscious? Then you have to do samskara. You have to imprint your consciousness in such a way that when you conceive the child will be saintly. So that Prabhupada said, before we conceive the children, we chant 50 rounds, minimum. Then we conceive the child, and at least you'll have a chance of having good children. There's no guarantee, though. So, any points?
What is the meaning of Brahman and Kshatriya combined?
Because he started off as a Kshatriya and then he became a Brahmana later on. So there's a whole story behind Vishwamrita and Vashishtha, and yeah, there's a lot of history. A lot of these personalities, there's a lot of details which are not given. So, any other points?
This was the work of Shulka, so Gopas translates as a dowry. So this is not the recent, it's been there for a long time.
Dowry.
Dowry system.
Yeah. Yeah, dowry is when the girl gets married, then you have to give money or wealth or something of value to the groom as well. And the idea is that if the husband passes away untimely, then she will have some wealth to maintain herself. Or if for some reason the family is not making money, and she'll have some wealth that she can trade to keep the family. So there should be a dowry system. That's the system. Yeah, because they're trying to. He feels there's a mismatch. Well, the person not qualified. But there should be some dowry. When you marry your children, then you should give some wealth. And the other point?
Have you seen that culture is absolutely not there in the Western countries?
In the what?
In the Western countries, I don't think parents even marry, like have enough money to marry, conduct the marriage of the children. I thought that boys and girls save up to conduct their own weddings. Not all parents
are
older fund
their
weddings. What
to
think of getting extra over and above the wedding expenses?
Yeah, it's still there. Like the parents, in a lot of cases, it's still there. My cousin got married in February, I think it was, and her parents put a lot of money into the wedding. Yeah, because she wanted the rich, they're wealthy family, so they gave a lot of money. So it's still there. But best policy on weddings is don't spend too much. That's the best policy, because it's all finished in a day anyway. Or in India, 3 days or 1 week or something. But then it's done, so why are you spending all this money? Just have a big feast, feed everyone, make them all happy, and then that's it. Yeah, these days, it's out of control. I mean, there's devotees in our congregation here in Melbourne, you know, when they hired out the
gasworks.
Yeah, I know some of the devotees, because I know the devotees. They spent $30,000 on the wedding, and that's devotees. Yeah, you should have given $30,000 to me, and then, like, you know, just had a nice feast, spent, you know, a couple of grand on the feast and like that. I mean, you can do it like that if you want, but my advice is just, you know,
simple.
Just have a big feast and make everyone happy. Because no one really cares anyway. I mean, you know, while the wedding's going on, everyone's just talking and everything anyway, so no one's actually paying any attention to the actual wedding. Everyone's just waiting for the feast. So just make a big feast, give it to everyone, get everyone's blessings, and then that's the end of the story. What's that?
Especially in India.
Yeah.
So they have the feast, you are talking about feast, so they have a feast like thanks to. So people can go and choose,
you know,
about 1,000
varieties. Yeah, I mean, that's okay if it's prasadam.
But not just
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just like the other day, Paris Hilton, her grandfather owns Hilton, all the hotels in the world, he owns it. So they're millionaires, like multi-millionaires. And she married one of the Rothschild boys, who are like the richest family on the planet. They finance everything. They own the World Bank. They own everything. You know, these are like the top. So, you know, people spend this kind of money, but it's unnecessary. Yeah, have a nice wedding, but just, you know, keep it real. I mean, I'm just saying it's devoted. I'm making a comment. It's my opinion, but just, you know, keep it simple and have a nice feast.
On the contrary, what about the samskars which needs to be done as part of the wedding when both these souls come together? So there are a lot of samskars that needs to be done as part of the kind of puja or something when you keep Krishna or Vishnu in the center, and that would take a day or two.
A day or two.
How should we see that?
No, for us, we just get the devotees to do the wedding. Just get the devotees. You don't need like 2 days of some brahmana just saying, you know, doing his whole thing for a day or two. That's not the potency of the wedding. It's like when Prabhupada installed Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada had to get the local pundits, the priests, to come and do the jagya. So they did a jagya and they, you know, chanting all the mantras. But then the devotees were on the side and the devotees were just doing kirtan. And Prabhupada said, actually, that installed the deities. He said it was the kirtan, so not all that. But he had to make, you know, keep everyone happy. So then he got all the pundits to come and do all their jagya. But if a devotee, the priest has to be a brahmana, that's the point. The priest has to be a Vaishnava, that's the point. So it doesn't matter that you get some priest, you have to get a devotee. That's, for us, that's important. So you can do it in a couple of hours, you don't need 2 days. Just like, I got married in January, so I think it lasted 2 hours maximum, the whole thing. You know, I wasn't going to go on for days and days and days and do the whole thing. So what's the most important thing? The most important thing is the holy name. Right? So I made sure nice kirtan was there, because the holy name was there. We worship Guru Raj. Worship the Lord, invoke his mercy, get the blessings of the devotees and have a nice feast, and that's it. It's up to you if you want to spend a lot of money in your kid's wedding, that's up to you, but it's not necessary, that's the main point. Any other points?
Earlier you mentioned about the Vaishya cannot be a thing, but nowadays we see that, like the same American elections, even the lady is coming for the for the presidency.
Hillary.
So that is also like quite not acceptable because in Shastras.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you see her, say, in the Vedas, it says.
I would if I get a chance, but.
Yeah, she'll be very impressed.
Well, she's a little old, only 67.
She's old and she's a woman.
Yeah.
Totally disqualified.
Totally.
Yeah, if you see her, then just say that to her.
Okay.
Just say you're old and you're a woman. So what is your qualification?
Guruji, you said in one of your lectures, I remember you said that Prabhupada said that the future generations, it will be the women who would be ruling, and which we can see now. I heard in your one of the lectures you saying that Prabhupada said that.
I never said that. Where did I say in the lecture that Prabhupada said in the future the women will be ruled?
You said that after a couple of generations, even I had some discussion with Jay Prabhu also on that.
I never said that. Prabhupada never said it, so why would I say it? I've never heard Prabhupada say that a couple of generations of women will rule everything, so I don't know where that came from. I didn't say it. Prabhupada didn't say it, to my knowledge. He didn't say anything that way. Prabhupada said, though, he said, women can be temple presidents. Prabhupada said that. He said, women can be temple presidents. So to say that, you know, Hillary Clinton can't be the president of America, I don't know if there's total validity in that. Because Prabhupada said, women can be temple presidents, he said. But he said they should still be obedient to their husband. Yeah, you might be the temple president, but you should still be very nice to your husband. I wouldn't even say obedient, but it just means, you know, just have the right mood towards the husband. You might be a temple president, but you can still See, these days women run everything. They run corporations, they run companies. Even when Prabhupada came to America, it was Srimati Maharaji. She was running the Scindia steamship company. That was back in the 60s in India. You see pictures of her, she's wearing a sari, you know, and she's got tilak on and everything. But she was the CEO of the shipping company. And Prabhupada went to her to get a free ticket to. So women have been running things for years and years and years. So to say that women can't run America, then I don't know. I don't think it's true. There's one devotee politician, you know, Tulsi.
Yes.
Tulsi Hubbard.
Tulsi Hubbard.
Yeah. Yeah. What is she? She's.
She's a member of an parliament or something.
Yeah, she's a senator in Hawaii. Like that. She's in the Senate in America, and she's a woman. You know, so to say they can't do that, especially at this point in time in Kali Yuga, our preaching is going to go nowhere. If we start making these statements, women can't do this, they can't do that, no one's going to join the Hare Krishna movement, for sure. Because women are always, they're already running half the things. Yeah, you know, they're probably running coals, you know, they're probably running...
Oh, you're my boss, you're a woman.
Yes. So what do you...
Yeah.
She's what?
She's very rude.
Yeah, women are rude by nature. No, I'm just joking. I mean, it's like, I mean, yeah, let's see. So what are you going to say to your boss? You're going to say, well, you know, it says in the Vedas that you can't be a boss. You know, you can't be superior. It doesn't make any sense. You know, and half the time women are better at things than men anyway. And you have to look at the qualification of the person. So the person is qualified then. It's like when Prabhupada was travelling in India in the beginning, the very early days, you know, Prabhupada had big pandals, thousands of people would come. And Prabhupada would say to Jamuna, you lead the kirtan on the stage. So he'd choose the women to lead the kirtan. It wasn't like he always chose the man or anything like that. You know, he would choose the women. So you lead the kirtan, Jamuna, like that. So you see in the old days, the old footage, when Prabhupada's preaching in India, a lot of the kirtan is being led by Jamuna or one of the other Manajis, or, you know, and he would get them to get up and speak like that. So Prabhupada was never like suppressing the women or, you know, he wasn't like that actually. It's more like after Prabhupada left the planet, the sannyasis took over the movement, and then they, you know, because they were young men and they had sex desire, then they kind of suppressed the women to a great degree. You know, there's some temples in India where they even tried to like kick the women out and stuff like that. But Prabhupada wouldn't allow that. You know, my Guru Maharaj in 1975, 74, 75, in Mayapur, they went to the meetings and he was on the Radha Damodar party, and that they were the top book distributors in America at the time. So then he had had all these brahmacharis and sannyasis now travelling around distributing books, they had buses and vans. So then he would pull into the temples, and then his brahmacharis, some of the brahmacharis would get married, or they would get off the bus, you know, stop being brahmacharis, and then arrange to get married to some of the girls in the temple. So Tamal Krishnamurti said to Prabhupada, this is wrecking the preaching. So he said to Prabhupada, he said, we should kick all the women out of ISKCON. And they actually brought that to the GBC meetings in 1975. I think 74 or 75. He brought it to the GBC. He was serious. He wanted to kick all the women out of ISKCON. And there was the whole thing going on in ISKCON. There was like two sides in ISKCON. One was, you know, the kick women out, and the other was to keep the women in. And it got to Prabhupada because it was in the GBC meeting. Prabhupada didn't go to the GBC meetings, but they would go to Prabhupada at the end of the day and talk about what they were talking about. And it took Prabhupada, who was the leader of the whole movement, he said, we're not going to do this. I'm not going to kick all the women out of ISKCON. You know, just because the sannyasis have got sex desire and they can't deal with the women. He said, we're not going to kick all the women out. No. So it was Prabhupada himself who made sure the women. So Prabhupada was very encouraging to the women in ISKCON, if you look historically. Like that. So to say they can't, because Prabhupada said they can be temple presidents, he said that. So to say that the woman can't become the president of America, I think you'll have problems if you present things.
I mean, she can if she's a devotee. She's not a devotee.
I don't think you want to put a devotee in at this point in time. Because they'll shoot at devotees, they won't. No one's going to listen to the devotees at this point in time. People aren't ready for us yet. Yeah, I mean, look at it. Look at, you're going to have Hillary Clinton, probably, or possibly, you're going to have Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. You know, these people are not, like, they're not in the headspace to listen to us yet. Any other points?
Here, Prabhupada started Brahmachari Ashram first time. Human Ashram. Sheltered the human.
Yeah, and he gave the women Brahman initiation, second initiation. That's not done. Even Bhakti Santa Sarasvati Thakur didn't do that. So it was never done, ever, before Prabhupada. It was the first time. Like that. And actually, even Prabhupada wasn't going to do it. The first time he gave Brahman initiation, he didn't include the women. And then the women came to Prabhupada and they said, if you don't give Brahman initiation to both, to men and women, so we won't come to the temple anymore.
Yeah.
They said that to him. And Prabhupada said, next day he said, okay, and then he initiated it. He gave them Brahman initiation. So Prabhupada thought about it. Prabhupada wasn't going to do it, but then he thought about it and he understood. If I do this, people aren't going to join. So he had to modify things. Time, place, and circumstance. The word Brahmacharini doesn't even exist. There's no such word, Brahmacharini. That's from Prabhupada. It's not Sanskrit. Any other points? When King Gati made this demand, the great sage Richika could understand the king's mind. Therefore he went to the demigod Varuna and brought from him the 1,000 horses that Gati had demanded. After delivering these horses, the sage married the king's beautiful daughter. Thereafter, Richika Muni's wife and mother-in-law, each desiring a son, requested the Muni to prepare an oblation. Thus, Richika Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahmana mantra and another for his mother-in-law with a Kshatriya mantra. Then he went out to bathe. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for her daughter, Richika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation. Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. George Jogannath.
A husband naturally has some affection for his wife. Therefore Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Richika must have been better than the own oblation in Richika's absence. The mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it.
Any points here that are interesting?
Nothing but the sphere of envy.
Yeah. But Prabhupada makes interesting comments about this, that if you look at the history of Mahabharata, you'll see that Kunti and Madri and Gandhari, there was rivalry. And they're very, very exalted persons. Like Kunti's, you know, considered to be a pure devotee. But Prabhupada makes an interesting comment. He says that the nature of a woman, even when she's very, very exalted, there will still be some like competition between women. Even very exalted people, you still see that tendency is there. So when one started having babies and the other one started having babies and they all become, that's what women are like. Therefore it says in the Shastra, who is in charge of the women? In the Bhagavatam it says specifically, who looks after the women? The husband, yeah. No, which demigod? Or which personality? Actually, it's Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva takes care. That's why on Mondays, if you want to get a... Good husband, what do you do?
Somavarvrat.
16 Mondays.
On Mondays they would take...
You fast?
Yeah.
Yeah, to please Lord Shiva. I'm just like, what day is it today?
Monday.
Yeah, I didn't eat anything all day. Usually I fast on Mondays. I try to fast once a week if I can. So usually on Mondays I do it, because the next life I want a good husband. The system, maybe Krishna himself. So there's a system. The system is that Lord Shiva, he gives protection to the women. Because women, even when they're very advanced, sometimes women are very advanced devotees, but still they have a womanly nature, a conditioning. So sometimes women, but they'll become like competitive with each other and things like that. What to speak of men? Men do the same thing as well. Even when men are very, very advanced, they can still have like that. Just like I was speaking to Anirudha Prabhu the other day, and he said, because he goes to the GBC meetings, he's in there. He's a regional secretary, so he's just below the GBC. So he says that even amongst the GBC, the gurus, the sannyasis, there's still problems between very advanced devotees, very prominent devotees in our movement. You know, there's still like rivalries and there's this and that. It's not like they all get along and everything's just pure and like that. So it's the nature of the material world. You know? Nature of the material world, even people in the Mahabharata, you know, Kunti and Madri and Gandhari, I mean, these are exalted, exalted people, but still there's some problem there. Only when you go to the spiritual world do things become dissolved. But in the material world, there's always problems, it seems. So you see here that there's some envy going on between the women. Like that. But practically, the men are exactly the same these days. Men aren't particularly... Like, you know, we always say men and women, and Prabhupada says women are less intelligent. We spoke about this last week, but these days I don't even pay much attention to the statements of the woman and the man. Practically everyone in Kali Yuga is practically the same. You know, I mean, we have the heaviest verses in the last chapter about women in the whole Bhagavatam. You know, a woman will kill her husband or her brother, like that. But, you know, a man will kill his sister or his wife, so it's the same. Kali Yuga, everything's practically the same. There's no real difference anymore. So. Any points?
One point I see is the mother was observing me, so she demanded that the daughter at the same time. She was very respectful. She knew that this obligation for me, but still she gave to mother, and took the other one back. Unlikely to happen in the young one, meet this again. Everyone is equally in me as a little bit of respect. There was a degree of respect from Satyavati.
Anything else? So, one of the main points in this section, or this chapter, is, as Prabhupada always explains, all the way through, he's very consistent on this point, because it's a very important point, is that everyone in the world is qualified by guna and karma, not by janma, which Krishna specifically says in the Gita. What is that verse? Guna kama vibhaga shaha. Jamma kama chame dipyam. What is the verse? It's not jamma kama chame dipyam. No, it's what's the verse? I'll quote the verse or not. Chaturvanyam maya shustam. Yeah, chaturvanyam maya shustam. Guna kama vibhaga shaha. So Krishna specifically says, and Prabhupada preaches on this point a lot, that we are qualified in this world according to guna and to karma. Guna means your qualities. Karma means the way you act, the way you like to do. So that is how we work out. It's not by janma. And it's caused a lot of problems in India for a long time actually. Even Lord Chaitanya's time was a big problem. You know, Haridas Thakur could not go into the temples, the Jagannath Mandir and the other temples. And even now, it's still the same. We can't go in. Yeah. When I go to Jagannath Puri, and then there's Patita Parvana Jagannath. If you look through the Simadvara, just to the right, there's a form of Jagannath. He's made of sandalwood pulp. And his name is Patita Parvana. You can read about him. And it says if you see him, it's the same as seeing Jagannath. So there's no disadvantage. Plus, Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you see the chakra on top of the temple, he said that's the same as seeing Jagannath as well. So there's no disadvantage. And plus, Jagannath's here in Melbourne. I can go on the duty room practically whenever I want. I can put my head on his feet if I want, practically any time. Mm-hmm. So Jagannath comes to us. So there's no impediment. But still, they try to stop us, you know, the white-bodied or the Western, the non-Hindu people, from going into the temple. So when I go there, then I pay obeisances to Patita Parvan Jagannath. We did that last year, right? Yeah. So we offered obeisances to Patita Parvan Jagannath. And then I always joke with the guards who are standing there. I always say, can you let me in? And they say, no, you're not a Hindu. And then I always have jokes with them like that. And I say, I'll give you money. Yeah. And I say, I'll give you 1 lakh. Sometimes they kind of look like that. Even one time I was at the Gundicha Mandir, which is down the other end. I said that to one of the men. I said, no, you can't come in, you're not a Hindu. And I said, I'll give you 1,000, I said 1,000 rupees, 10,000 like that. I said, 1 lakh. And he said, 1 lakh. And then he walked off and went to go and talk to someone. You know? And then he came, yeah, so it was possible. You can buy your way into these situations. But their philosophy is that if you're not Hindu, you can't go into the temple. But that's false. Prabhupada said it's not by Janma. Krishna does not accept us according to Janma. Krishna accepts us according to Guna and to Karma. How we are.
Guruji, its main is that if you're not born in Bharat Varsha, you cannot enter. Because I heard in a lecture of Maharaj, he was saying that it's because, you know, we have not taken birth in Bharat Varsha, and they consider anyone taking birth outside Bharat Varsha as, so
they
didn't allow, that's
the reason. Yeah, that's one reason. But it's they discriminate more than that also. But there's no I mean, yeah, there could be Vedic statements about that. But it doesn't disqualify. According to Vaishnava philosophy, according to Sanatana Goswami in Hari Bhakti Vilas, he quotes that if you are purified, then you become qualified to worship the Lord. Just like bell metal, which is touched by a certain state, then it turns into gold. So any person from anywhere in the world, Malechas, Yavanas, and Prabhupada proved the point. He could take people from very fallen backgrounds, like us, we were very fallen. You know, we were not following the regulated principles, and we were very fallen. But he took us, and then he engaged us in Krishna service. He made us qualified. Gave us some qualification to serve Krishna. So these statements are not acceptable. So Krishna emphasizes this because of your guna and your karma. If you have the right qualities and you work properly according to the Varnashram system, then you're qualified to serve Krishna. Any other points? No, there's restrictions. Not all of them, but some. Like Siddhabakul you can go into, and Gundicha you can't. No, you can't go in. And the one at the Jagannath Ballabha Gardens you can't go into. But some you. Totogopinath you can. Yeah, Totogopinath you can.
Doesn't make sense
because there are so many Western devotees who are in Vrindavan, they're taking birth, even they take on the non-arrow thing. What's that? There are devotees who have been born in India. They've been there for a long time. Yeah, it's nothing about, it doesn't matter where you're born or anything like that. It's not the qualifications. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are not that, because he made Haridas Thakur was a Muslim. Lord Chaitanya said he is the Namacharya. He was the highest devotee amongst all of Lord Chaitanya's associates. And Lord Chaitanya went to him and he said that, because they wouldn't let him into the Jagannath temple. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, he said, you just stay here and you pay your obeisances to the chakra. And he said, that's as good as going in. So that's what, and Prabhupada says that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, they can't let us in, then we just offer obeisances to the chakra. And it's the same. You know, when I go to Jagannath Puri, I don't feel like I'm missing something. I'd like to go and see Jagannath in the temple. I'd like to, but no, Jagannath is here. He's on the altar right there. I can go right now and see him if I want. He's right there, so what's the problem? You can go to Rath Yatra. We have Rath Yatra here in Melbourne. You know, one day we'll have Rath Yatra at Geelong and all those things. So what's the difference? I mean, yeah, Puri is special because it's Puri, but still. You had a point?
I just want to ask, like, when you mentioned the thing about even in the GBC, they don't get along.
So not all of them. It's not like the whole GBC, it's not like they're all just fighting the whole time. So. No, I mean, it means amongst individuals, you know, not everyone gets along with everyone, that's the point. It's not like they're all just fighting, and most of them get along. But there might be a few who don't get along with this one and that one. But even in our life, like you're living in the ashram, right? There was like 15 guys in there or something. Do you get along with everyone? You don't, right? So you don't. But that's natural. So you've got 15 guys, maybe one or two you don't get along with. That's just natural. So you just offer respects to them, you know, you're respectful to the devotees. You should never be disrespectful. But you might not become close to them because you're different. So that's what I meant to say. I don't mean like all the GBC are, it's not like, you know, they just go to Mayapur and they just fight. And I didn't mean that. But, you know, out of like there's 30 of them on the GBC, or 30 or 40, so it means, you know, a couple of them might not get along with a couple of the other ones, that's all. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
And you want any more clarification?
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, if a new person that loses their faith is even the leaders are...
No, but, yeah, so the point I'm trying to make is that in the material world, these things happen, even amongst very advanced devotees. So sometimes we have to come to terms with these things. Because, yeah, you're right, it does make you think, well, you know, if they're not getting along, but then you have to be a little bit real. Because Prabhupada says that even in the Mahabharata, you know, these are like Kunti and these very, I mean, they're like pure devotees. They're like, God, but still there's some things going on. You know? And even like Bhishma is one of the Mahajans, but then, you know, when Draupadi was being disrobed, he didn't say anything. So there's all sorts of things going on. So even on the highest levels, there's still some things going on. So it means we have to be a little bit mature. I remember a few years ago then, one of the very advanced devotees in ISKCON, he had some problem with sex desire. And for me, he's like a shiksha guru, he's an advanced devotee. And when he had the problem, I was in Mayapur and I found out, and then it really disturbed me. Like really disturbing, because I thought, well, if he's having problems, that's how we think, right? If an advanced devotee is having problems, then we think, how can I do it? You know, so that's exactly how I felt. I was very disheartened. I thought, you know, I'm trying really hard, and he's much more advanced than me, and he's having problems. Yeah, and he's like nearly like 70 years old, and like. But then, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, then I understood, is this the nature of the material world? It's the nature of the material world happens. Okay. So we don't lose faith, we just stick to the path and we just try to be sincere as we can. And Krishna will rectify us. So sometimes you hear like the advanced authorities are arguing amongst themselves, you just, you know, be very humble, you think, oh, it's the material world like that. But you just keep serving, you stay respectful. You know, some devotee falls down or has a difficulty, very, you know, like Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, he's like GBC of Australia, he's like one of the top, you know, persons there. And then he fell down from his sannyas ashram. But then he was here last year, you know, he's still going around preaching. You know, preaching in Russia and, you know, he's still doing this thing. So, you know, we offer respect to the devotees. Right? But it's the nature of the material world, sometimes things will happen. Radhanath Swami said in Mayapur a couple of years ago, he said, everyone will have difficulties. Everyone. All of us will have difficulties on different levels. You know. Some of us just might be mental, but other people have physical duties. Everyone will have duties. Everyone falls down, that's what he said. Everyone falls down. Whether it's in the mind or in the, you know, until you're like Prabhupada, you know, like completely pure, that everyone falls down. Okay, but we just keep serving and we just offer respect to everyone. Have I wrecked your life? Are you okay? You'll still get up and chant your rounds tomorrow? Yeah? And stash your burpees? I know what you do. Okay. Any other points? There's an important point to understand that even Prabhupada says, even the advanced devotees, you know, there's still things going on. And I'm studying this at the moment. I'm reading one book by one of Prabhupada's disciples. And very deep analysis of the process of Shraddha to Prema. And he points out that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that even up to the platform of Bhava, devotees still have some material desires. Even up to the platform of Bhava Bhakti, which means very, very high bhakti, material desires not 100% gone. Almost gone, but still this little thing. And we see like Jad Bharata, Bharat Maharaji fell down. He was on that high level. Like that. So things are still there. So it means we have to be realistic about our process. It takes a long time to be purified. So we just have to be realistic about the whole thing. Okay. When the great sage, which one are we up to?
Number 10.
We're up to that? Yeah, I didn't read it. When the great sage, Richika, returned home after bathing and understood what had happened in his absence, he said to his wife, Satyavati, "You have done a great wrong. Your son will be a fierce Kshatriya, able to punish everyone, and your brother will be a learned scholar in spiritual science." So, Mahatma Prabhu, can you read the first paragraph?
A Brahman is highly qualified when he can control his senses and mind, when he is a learned scholar in spiritual science, and when he is tolerant and forgiving. A Kshatriya, however, is highly qualified when he is fierce in giving punishment to wrongdoers. These qualities are stated in Bhagavad Gita, 18.4243. Because Satyavati, instead of eating her own aggression, had eaten that which was meant for her mother, she would give birth to a son imbued with the Kshatriya spirit. This was undesirable. The son of a Brahmana is generally expected to become a Brahmana. But if such a son becomes fierce like a Kshatriya, he is designated according to the description of the four Varnas in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnyam, Maya Shrishtam, Purusha, and Vara. If the son of a Brahmana does not become like a Brahmana, he may be called a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or a Shudra, according to his qualification. The basic principle for dividing society is not a person, but that is quality in action.
So what are the points?
Srila Prabhupada always emphasizes that it's not a question of birth, it's qualities in action.
Yeah, that's the point. And Prabhupada, he drives this home. And actually, Lord Chaitanya's whole philosophy is based on this principle. His whole philosophy is based on the principle. It's not according to Janma or your birth. Because Lord Chaitanya, there was a lot of opposition when Lord Chaitanya was on the planet. You know, the whole pastime with Haridas Thakur and all these things. And if you go down through the ages to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there was huge opposition. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his life was threatened. They said, you know, someone will kill you. He was told. They said, someone, if you don't stop preaching about stopping this caste system, you know, because the caste brahmanas, they were being threatened by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. They made a threat to him. They said, something will happen to you. Right? And it was known that there was a threat against his life. And even in Mayapur, they went to the commissioner of the police, in charge of the police, and they wanted to give him some money. And they said, "We're going to assassinate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but we'll give you some money. You don't say anything. You just, you know, that's what happens in India. Still, the program is there." So they said normally we would do it, but not for him. Because he is a sattu. We're not getting involved on this. Like that. So, and they came to him and they said, be very careful. They said, they're trying to kill you. So, all the way. And then Prabhupada's time, same thing. Prabhupada was very heavy on it. He preached against it. His caste system. Like that. Lord Chaitanya's time, it was there. So, it's the Bhagavatam philosophy. The Bhagavatam philosophy is that it's not important how you are born. It is important how you behave and what your qualities are. That is what is important. Okay. Satyavati, however, pacified Richika Muni with peaceful words and requested that her son not be like a fierce Kshatriya. Richika Muni replied, then your grandson will be of a Kshatriya spirit. Thus, Jamadagni was born as the son of Satyavati. Satyavati later became the sacred river Kaushiki to purify the entire world, and her son Jamadagni married Renuka, the daughter of Renu. By the semen of Jamadagni, many sons headed by Vasuman were born from the womb of Renuka. The youngest of them was named Rama or Parashurama. Learned scholars accept this Parashuram as the celebrated incarnation of Vasudeva, who annihilated the dynasty of Kartavirya. Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas on earth 21 times. When the royal dynasty, being excessively proud because of the material modes of passion and ignorance, became irreligious and ceased to care for the laws enacted by the Brahmanas, Parashuram killed them. Although their offense was not very severe, he killed them to lessen the burden of the world. So, Jamuna Lila, you can read the first paragraph.
The Kshatriyas are the ruling class must govern the world in accordance with the rules and regulations enacted by the great Brahmanas and saintly persons. As soon as the ruling class becomes irresponsible in regard to the religious principles, it becomes a burden on the earth. As stated here, Rajas Tamo Vritam Bharam Abhramanyam, when the ruling class is influenced by the lower modes of nature, namely ignorance and passion, it becomes a burden to the world and must then be annihilated by superior power. We actually see from modern history that monarchies have been abolished by various revolutions, but unfortunately the monarchies have been abolished to establish the supremacy of third class and fourth class men. Although monarchies overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance have been abolished in the world, the inhabitants of the world are still unhappy. For although the qualities of the former monarchs were degraded by taints of ignorance, these monarchs have been replaced by men of the mercantile and worker classes, whose qualities are even more degraded. When the government is actually guided by Brahmanas or God-conscious men, then there can be real happiness for the people. Therefore, in previous times, when the ruling class was degraded to the modes of passion and ignorance, the Brahmanas, headed by such a Kshatriya-spirited Brahmanas Parshuram, killed them 21 consecutive times.
So what are the points? So the defect of the modern world, we said before, is that everyone is in the mode of passion and ignorance. Prabhupada said when he was on the Jaladutta and he was arriving in Boston Harbor and he wrote his diary on the Jaladutta, he said, all I see is passion and ignorance. Everyone is covered by the lower modes of nature. And you see the modern government, they're completely under the influence of passion and ignorance. And therefore modern society is just under passion and ignorance. Rajagun and Tamagun. So therefore, they have no qualification to rule the citizens because all the decisions are being made on the wrong basis. So, what is the result? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you're in the mode of passion, it will end in distress. And if you're in the mode of ignorance, you're always in distress. So that's modern society, right? It's either in distress or it's leading to distress. Just watch the news every night. It's a big mess. Melbourne City, the city we live in here, it's a big mess. Right? If you look at the news and see all the problems that are there, there's a big, big problem. So because they will not stop their passionate behavior, Rajagun, if it's not harnessed, right, it just degrades into Tamagun. Right? And if you do control your Rajagun, you can lift yourself up to Mode of Goodness, which is what we're doing as devotees. We're very passionate still. You see, devotees, because we come from the backgrounds we come from, we're still very passionate. But we're learning to control our passion and elevate ourselves gradually to goodness. When you become in the mode of goodness, then you're very well situated. You can make advancement nicely. It's hard to make advancement when you're too passionate. And it's very difficult when you're too ignorant. So therefore, we have to elevate ourselves. But modern society is on the wrong path, unfortunately. Any points? So, Nila Gopa, you want to read the last paragraph?
The ruling class, Rajarya, will be no better than Surandras, Dasyus. The third class and fourth class will monopolize the affairs of the government. Ignoring the religious principles and grammatical norms and regulations, they will certainly try to plunder the religious and the citizens without consideration. That state elsewhere in the world. Being unpurified, neglecting to discharge human nature properly, and being influenced by the most of passion and ignorance, unclean people posing as members of the Gunway will spoil the citizens. And in still another place, Srimad Bhagavatam says,
just read the English.
Srimad Bhagavatam says, human society is naturally grouped into four divisions, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. But if the system is neglected and the qualities and virtues of society are not considered, the result will be Brahmavita Kshatra Sudrama. The so-called caste system of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra will be meaningless. As a result, whoever somehow or other becomes powerful will be the king and the king. And thus, the prajas or citizens will be so harassed that they will give up heat and cold and will go to the forest to escape harassment by those many officials who have no mercy and are addicted to the ways of prajas. Therefore, the brothers are the people in Japan must take the Krishna consciousness movement, the Hare Krishna movement, which is the sound intonation of the Supreme Master of the Godhead. Kali Kale Rava Rupai Krishna Avatara. Krishna, the Supreme Master of the Godhead, has now appeared as incarnation by his holy name. Therefore, when the puja, when the prajas become Krishna consciousness, they can then expect a good government and good society, a perfect life and liberation from the
bondage
of mental
existence. So, what are Prabhupada's points?
Your government will be plunderers, like the thieves, and they will harass everybody where everybody will be running through the forest.
And for
avoid that, we have to take up the devotional service.
Yeah, well, that solves a part of it, but you're still going to be harassed by the government. You can chant as much as you want, they're still going to harass you. And you see already it's happening. I mean, look at the price of living already. All the devotees are struggling already.
Taxes are big.
Yeah, taxes are big. Devotees tell me, sometimes I speak to the devotees, that, they have to have two jobs. Husband and wife both have to work just to kind of, make a reasonable kind of living. So that's just the nature of the Kali Yuga. Even you see the last few years, because you all know, you just see the price of living going up every year. It becomes a struggle. So, as Prabhupada is pointing out, Varnashram cannot be properly implemented in this day and age. Not like it was before. So basically the only shelter is the chanting of the holy name. That can rectify the situation. In our own lives and in the lives of society. If people chant, at least we can make things peaceful and we can make things work. Just like you see in Greece at the moment, you see the problems which are going on there. Because of this false economy, too much pressure, and then the whole economy is apparently collapsing. But actually there's no problem. Because what are the Greek people doing? everyone's just starting to work together because there's a so-called economic crisis. So, because people don't have money, what we call money these days, like paper or cash, then if you owe your landlord rent, because they know everyone's struggling, the landlord said, well, just don't pay, just live here. Yeah? Because there's no money going around in society at the moment. So people, and that's how it can be, even to this day and age. We don't need to have all this false currency. We can just live together, and we can grow food, which is the actual necessity of life. And then that's the, what's the problem in Greece? They've got all this nice land. Just go out and grow food, and then they can all live nicely. You know, and the reason, and you see all over Europe at the moment, and all over the world, the economies are on the verge of collapse. It's not just Greece, it's many of the economies. The Irish, the Spanish, many of the economies there. And it's interesting, it's happening to Greece first. And why is it happening to Greece first? Because there's no ISKCON in Greece. Right? It's very hard to preach there. You know, one of my devotee friends, Tara Prabhu, he preached there for about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, and he could hardly make any devotees. Right? And he said, in Greece, there's practically no one who's vegetarian. Right? The whole country, they eat a lot of meat. They've done it for thousands of years. And they're wondering why the economy's falling apart. There's so much simple activity. In Greece, they think you're vegetarian if you eat lamb. That's like vegetarian for them. Are you vegetarian? Okay, we'll give you lamb. That's how they think. I think that's like vegetarian. So they're wondering why the whole thing's falling apart. So the only thing that can rectify this is the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.